Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin A.C., Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. There's Ryan Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune. It is Monday. Padres about to begin a three-game series in Anaheim. That's where I'm at. Just came from Kansas City this morning. Ryan, we have a lot to get to, but we probably should start with the news. Why don't you break it down for us?
Yeah, the report from the Wall Street Journal posted about an hour before we record here says that Padres infielder Tucapita Marcano, who has not played for them this year because he's been on the injured list, is facing a potential lifetime ban from baseball amid allegations that he bet on the sport while with the Pirates. Again, Marcano, a little bit of background here, was a Padres draft pick who got traded to Pittsburgh. The Padres claimed him, this last offseason, was seen as a bench piece for them. The Padres have issued a statement essentially saying that it's an ongoing investigation and they have no comment. I'm sure that there will be more to this story. The Padres also need to make a move at some point today, so I would be curious to see if that factors into what they do. So keep an eye on this developing story. I'm sure by the time this hits your ears, there will be more out there about this very serious allegation that Tucapita Marcano is facing.
Yeah, generally, especially something like this, when a national outlet gets something or even, you know, if a local outlet gets it, something this important, when it's reported, it's very close to the end. Like the Marcano's decision is likely coming down here very soon. And the Padres statement also was sure to say he's accused of doing this. They didn't mention the player by name. They said the player in question and he is accused of doing these things, alleged to have done these things while with another team. Right. So it will be Tucapita with Marcano in his Padres jersey from this spring training, plastered all over the place. It will say Padres infielder. And, you know, that's the way it goes. But I do think it's at least somewhat important to say that he was not with the Padres because this is a major allegation, and it would not have been leaked if it were not real. Like he's not just being investigated. This is about to happen, and this is the cardinal sin in sports.
Kevin, I remember we spent the bulk of the late 80s and early 90s talking about Pete Rose and whether he bet on baseball, and even now, you know, is he sorry for it and all of that. Baseball fans can forgive a lot, and they have. I mean, you could look on the Padres' own roster. Baseball fans will forgive a lot. They will not forgive somebody who gambles on the sport, and almost certainly will not forgive anybody who affects the outcome of a game. That is not being alleged here, or it's not known. We're right. It's not known at all. That part is not known. But, you know, again, this is a pretty big deal for Tucapita Marcano and for the Padres and all of baseball. One interesting line in that Wall Street Journal story, Kevin, is that there are five players who are being investigated for betting on baseball. And Marcano is the only name that we know at the moment. So this could be a developing story for other franchises and other beats too. So we'll see what happens there. Like I said earlier, the Padres have to make a move before Tuesday, because as we've reported this morning, Adam Mazur is going to make his major league debut for the Padres Tuesday in Anaheim. What do we know about Mazur and why him, and why not try to patch it together with a bullpen game or something else? This segment is brought to you by Hamul Casino. Kick off summer at their annual block party on June 15th. It's a full day of free play, live music, free food, and more. Learn more at HamulCasinoSD.com.
Adam Mazur is their third-ranked pitching prospect, their fifth-ranked overall, according to MLB.com. What that means is he has some potential in the major leagues. He's a strike thrower, but not a swing-and-miss guy. It worked really well in double A. My understanding is he's actually pitched well in triple A, but as often happens, make a few mistakes at some point in the game in Vegas, in El Paso, in Albuquerque, in Reno. I think he had a start in Vegas, a couple in El Paso after dominating at double A. And your ERA is going to be inflated in the Pacific Coast League. So they're high on this guy. They believe he's ready. Look, they could, let's say they were off yesterday, or they were going to be off Thursday, rather than this being Tuesday being the fifth game in 13 days in a row. And by the way, 23-24 and their bullpen wasn't spent. And, you know, you had some time off coming up. Maybe they'd go with Adrian Morejon, John A. Brito, but just not the avenue that they're going to go. They've been touting their starting pitching depth. Fortunately for them, since Yu Darvish also went on the injured list, Randy Vasquez is pitching well. And now they need some other guys. Adam Mazur,
right.
First.
Right. Adam Mazur went to the University of Iowa, by the way. He is a fighting Bryce Millers of the University of Iowa. So there we go. College guy, Big Ten guy. Big strong kid.
Hey, I think Mazur would be lined up to pitch a Sunday day game, which is when Bryce comes out is day games, because that's what columnists do. So, wow, that's going to work out really well for Bryce.
It'll work out great. They can talk about Iowa City. of course, the reason why the Padres need starting pitching on Tuesday is because I don't want to catastrophize this, but Saturday morning was about as bad a series of news as you could get. Padres put Joe Musgrove and Yu Darvish both on the injured list. Two very different reasons. Darvish, you know, they're optimistic that he can be back sooner rather than later. Musgrove seems a little bit more serious. What went into their decisions to, let's start with Joe Musgrove, put him on the IL?
Well, as he was throwing Friday, I guess, there had been some signs, but like they thought maybe he could make his start on Saturday. And then Friday, his catch session, it didn't go well. It's not that it's impossible, but that he's not able to pitch without discomfort and, you know, not to get all technical, as if I understand it, but to properly complete his motion with this issue that's happening in the elbow, which it's the triceps tendonitis. They absolutely insist it's not structural, to do with the elbow. And yes, you're correct that Musgrove probably a little longer than Musgrove, or at least a little longer than Darvish on the shelf here, but that they talk about them both in the same terms of they'll be back and be effective. That is their belief, that maybe a little more than precautionary with Joe, but that they believe that he will pitch and be Joe Musgrove again this season.
Right. So, but these are not 10-day or 15-day injured list situations. This is
second time on the IL for both of them. It's the same thing for Joe. So that has its own alarm bells. And then two different things for 37-year-old Yu Darvish. That has its own set of alarm bells. So I agree with you. Like Saturday morning, I believe there was a pall over that like entire day. And you know what? There's a pall over the team until they can get through this, right? And either these guys return and they're still there in playoff position or whatever, but like this is a big deal, man. Like they're painting it as positively as they can, and I do believe there's legitimacy to that, but there also is an acknowledgement like we're gonna have to scramble here, like we're gonna have to find ways to get this done.
Sure. And you know, when we were talking back in March or in February, you know, we said, hey, you know, two legitimate starting pitchers isn't enough, right? If this team is a playoff team, they need to go get more guys. And to their credit, they did, right? They went and they traded for Dylan Cease. Michael King has been, I think, probably as good, if not maybe a little bit better than you would have expected, especially after the performance he put on the other day. Matt Waldron, I think, has been a pleasant surprise. But the fact remains that they need these two guys at the top of their rotation. If not them, then somebody else, if they think that they're going to be a playoff team. If we're handicapping this at the moment, Kevin, do you think that this is a time when they make a push for a starting pitcher on the trade market?
If they have to, meaning that like they can afford it and they're going to, you know, they feel like they need to make a move now to get that guy. Are they talking? Sure. I by the way, I know that, but also I could guess that, and so could anybody else, because it's AJ Preller. But
they always talk to everybody. Yeah.
But they would like to wait because the price goes down then in terms of what you're going to pay a quality guy, right? Though there are some younger guys out there. But what you're talking about here, and which I believe is valid, is that you want a guy who's proven, who's going to give you quality innings. And so right now, wait and see. As you mentioned, Waldron pitching well. King has that potential to be that guy like every time out to give you a quality start. Dylan Cease, same thing. How did Mazur do? How did Vasquez do? Then kind of see how they're going to be able to get through this. They do have a period after this 23 games in 24 days, where it's like, I was talking with someone though, they're like, it's going to feel like we're on vacation. They don't go more than like a few days without a day off, I don't think. But there's like a homestand with 2 days off. It's the longest homestand of the year, but still. And then there's a road trip the day off. Like there is a way that they get through this or get to the trade deadline without having made a move.
Yeah. Also, Zach Greinke's throwing on backfields in Phoenix, but I'm just the uninformed speculation on my end here. You're the informed speculation. I'm uninformed. Yeah, he's been throwing on the Diamondbacks backfields. Yeah, veteran guy right here.
Wall, something will happen.
That's true. That was a weird series in Kansas City. The Padres take 2 of 3, but they get the daylight scared out of them Friday. Warning track fly ball that if it clears would have tied the game. And then, Saturday they win big on a day when they get bad news, and then they get walked off on Sunday. Was it as draining on them as it appeared to be on TV?
Yes. Draining might be like not Atlanta draining from a few weeks ago, but man, it was intense. And just to, quickly review it yesterday, I don't mean to insult Yuki Matsui, but like you could see that coming from a mile away. Yeah. Right? Like if Padres had a chance to score more in the eighth and you're like, that's what they need to do. And they did. They got 2 runs and, they could have made it more. And then you're feeling okay. Maybe it's even like Johnny Brito coming in or something or whatever. But like they were down to and they got their 7 innings from Michael King. Gigantic. They were down to Eniel De Los Santos and Yuki Matsui. Robert Suarez was not available. Wandy Peralta was not available. Jeremiah Estrada was not available. All had pitched the previous 2 days. Not only that, but Robert Suarez, besides having to come in and throw just 6 pitches Friday when Stephen Kolek blew up, he had gotten hot when it was a close game in the bullpen to start the eighth. That's not something a closer does. A closer gets hot and comes in. So basically, forget the 6 pitches he threw Friday. Robert Suarez had a big day Friday and then a big day Saturday. He was down. They just, Robert Suarez would have told you he could pitch. Probably Wandy Peralta would have told you, and Jeremiah Estrada too. But no, that wasn't going to happen. Jeremiah Estrada threw 34 pitches the day before, and it just wasn't going to happen. And so you could blame this on Stephen Kolek. If you want, you could say, Mike Schilt, why did you bring Robert Suarez in on Saturday to protect a 4-run lead in the ninth? Well, I will say this. That's a valid question. And I will say this as well. The Royals are a pretty good lineup. And look what they did on Sunday. Look what they did on Friday night. That was a win Mike Schilt had in hand. He didn't know what was going to happen Sunday. He had a win that he could lock down with Robert Suarez that night. He might have gotten blown out Sunday and regretted he didn't use Robert Suarez. He might have blown out the Royals on Sunday and regretted he didn't use Robert Suarez if something bad had happened on Saturday. But it was a fascinating, an intense series of just how, as I put it today in the newsletter, like one thing led to another. And it was, there's just a lot to talk about. And we haven't even got to Luis Arraez, but there's just, it was quite a series.
Yeah, a series. And if there's one thing that we learned, and again, I was talking to somebody about this last night, because I talk about the Padres for fun, even when it's not on a podcast. If there's one thing we've learned about Mike Schilt, I think at this point in the season, we're 2 months in, it's that he plays to win that night's game more often. If you can win tonight, for the most part, he will push his chips in, right? And that if that means it burns you a couple days from now, he's willing to take that chance. And he said as much. I mean, he told you in today's Padres newsletter, he said, and Fernando Tatis said, or when he said, hey, when we had to bring in Suarez in on Friday night, we thought, oh, that might burn us later in the series, right? Fernando, it's when you play to win every night, you subject yourself to days like Sunday where, you're just hoping that the reliever you call on can get the outs, and he didn't do it.
There have been a few times where you hit the nail on the head, and there have also been a few times they're less noticeable because, it's like proven a negative, basically. They go unnoticed. There have been times where Mike's moves have been predicated on the fact that he has to think a few days down the road. It happened one time in the Atlanta series. I can't remember exactly what it was, but I've noticed a couple times when they've happened, and I've talked to him about a couple times that he obviously has his eye on the whole season. But yes, I would say more than some managers, it's like, no, we're going to do this now, how he uses defensive replacements. He wants to make sure that wins don't become losses.
Yeah. No,
and there's nothing exactly you can do about that one yesterday. Once Stephen Kolek on Friday and once Mike made that decision on Saturday, there was nothing more to do. I got so many emails today about that Mike blew that. And then when my follow-up question is, who would you have brought in? The answer is generally anybody. Okay. Okay. Look, that's your prerogative. But that's two things. You didn't answer my question. And it's very easy for us all to say, hey, my solution would have worked.
Right.
Yours was proved not to, but mine would have worked. No one's ever going to know, but mine would have worked.
This segment is brought to you by Hamul Casino. Kick off summer at their annual block party on June 15th. It's a full day of free play, live music, free food, and more. Learn more at HamulCasinoSD.com.
To me, what's so interesting, too, is now that the Padres have a reliever who will pitch in non-save situations, will pitch on back-to-back days, a closer, I mean, in Robert Suarez, who can be used in different ways, it really does change the calculus in terms of if you can use him, right? Maybe that affects tomorrow and the day after, you know, when he comes in high leverage situations, but it's not the ninth. I mean, okay, then who closes for you, right? There's different, just the calculus of all of it is different when you have a guy who is willing to do what the previous closer would not do.
Right. And what some other closers aren't. And by the way, Mike Schilt's not the most. I haven't checked, which is why I didn't write the other day. I don't think that I checked it to update my stats because it's a very laborious task. But I have recently and found out that a lot of managers are doing what Mike is doing now and having their closer protect a four-run lead.
Right.
So, like, it's a thing because, you know, especially if you're going to be facing the top of the order, you know, you're facing the Yankees, the Dodgers, you know, the Phillies, which the Padres didn't necessarily have that situation where they had a four-run lead against those teams.
Yeah, I don't think they led against the Phillies, but yeah.
but like he's not totally alone in this, and Robert Suarez, you know, doesn't get a purple heart for it. But I don't think that we can talk too much about what Robert Suarez has been willing to do and how just completely selfless that he has been.
Sure. I'm on a couple of text chains with friends and family members, and the topic is almost always the Padres. And when Luis Arraez came out of yesterday's game, there was a lot of, oh no, oh no, oh no. More so than even with the starting pitching, which I thought was interesting. Luis Arraez is everybody's new favorite Padre, and came out yesterday. Take me through sort of what he told you after the game and what this might mean for him going forward.
He said, I'm good and that I will play. He had a tape on his right shoulder, and they say it's like a little bit of a neck and a shoulder. So it's like in here, I'm doing this, if you're watching live, between the shoulder and the neck. Guess I didn't really need to do that since I said it was between the shoulder and the neck. Look, everyone says that it was precautionary. Look, they're facing a lefty tonight. They're facing a good lefty tonight. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean Luis Arraez has now started against like five straight lefties. He's only sat against, I think, the first two when he was here, or two of the first three or something like that. He's not a platoon guy. But if you were going to give him a rest, if we don't see him in the lineup today, let's not just go nuts, because maybe today was just the day to give him a rest. Don't know.
Sure. He is hitting 391 as a Padre. and by the way, appointment television for me. I don't know about you. You know, we talk all the time, Kevin, about which guys you sort of lower your laptop screen to watch when you're covering a game. To me, he is a guy who, when I've got the game on, I stop and watch just because he's so different.
He's so entertaining. You've never been so excited to see a potential single in your life. Well, not since, you know what, probably took Tony for granted. This is more like, this is renewing the appreciation for Tony Gwynn. This is, you know, that was probably taken for granted over the years. Like, oh yeah, here comes Tony Gwynn to go 3-for-5. So this is different.
And you made a great point on our last show. You said, do you think that we all appreciate him and like him more because we grew up watching Tony Gwynn? And I think about that. Even now, like I thought about it over the weekend, and maybe that's it. Maybe I like Luis Arraez because I loved Tony. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it's yes. You can you. I think it's probably both. You appreciate him for how exciting that is and how talented he is at what he does, how unique it is in today's game. Mm-hmm. But yes, without a doubt, I think that you know, you grew up watching the best one of the best. We got Rod Carew in there, you know, one of the best to ever do what? That particular skill set.
Yes, yes, yes. Now you bring, I don't even know what the comp is. I don't know, is it being an Angels fan or Angels, an A's fan, and they bring up somebody who steals a ton of bases like Ricky used to? You know, is it something like that? I don't know. I don't know. Let's talk about the Angels here. This is not a good baseball team who the Padres are playing in a 3-game series, but the pitching makes me a little nervous. And the Padres' record this year against teams that aren't very good makes me a little nervous. What are we anticipating heading into the 3 games here in Anaheim?
I think that, because that's legitimate there. I think Tyler Anderson is trouble. I think you could look and find reasons to think Patrick Sandoval and Jose Siriano, who are pitching the next 2 nights, they're certainly capable pitchers, not having great years. Tyler Anderson has given the Padres trouble when he was with the Dodgers. That's the last time he faced them was 2022. So some of the same hitters, and he really did well his last 3 starts there. His last 3 starts this season, I think it's like 3 runs in 20 innings. He is a legit pitcher. Here's what I will say, both about facing a left-hander, a good pitcher, and then about facing a bad team, is the Padres contend, and it certainly does seem, given recent results, Rockies notwithstanding, it's about how the Padres are playing.
Yes.
They didn't play well. They didn't move the line offensively. Right. They made a few small but crucial mistakes, and they got swept by the Rockies.
Right.
They haven't done that by and large since. Okay.
Right.
They played that terrible game against the Marlins and lost to them. Okay. They took 2 out of 3 against the Marlins. Should have swept them, or could have, whatever. I will say, we'll know that, right? You've got the Angels, the Diamondbacks struggling a little bit, and the A's, right? Who are not struggling as much as we would have thought, but nonetheless,
right.
You know, struggling.
Yes.
Not a playoff team. And so I think we'll find out. Is it about the Padres and like, can they play well against these teams?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, they played well against the Royals. They really did. They played well against the Dodgers, and they played well against the Braves. I think the Reds are a good team. They showed that after the Padres left Cincinnati. So they played well against the Reds. So, yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. If you asked me at the start of the year, or even 10 minutes ago, who the Angels' best offensive player was, I would not have guessed Taylor Ward. Taylor Ward. There we go. Right. It's not not Mike Trout. Mike Trout's hurt. Stop me if you've heard this. Mike Trout's hurt.
Anthony Rendon is hurt. Not that that matters as much, given that he has been hurt a lot and hasn't performed. But your quote unquote dangerous guys. Yes.
Yes. Guess who's in the bullpen for the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, by the way?
I'm embarrassed to say I don't know, because while I did do some research on the starters and their offense, I didn't go that deep. Who is?
Remember Luis Garcia?
Oh, okay.
Luis Garcia is 3-for-5 in save chances this year.
So if he'll either come in and just absolutely shove against the Padres, or they'll score 6 runs in an inning off of him. Based on what I know of Luis Garcia, who could be disgustingly good.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. And it's funny. I'm not going to make the comps with Luis Garcia and Jeremiah Estrada, because they're two different guys in two different situations. But you ask, hey, why did the Cubs let a guy like Jeremiah Estrada, who is filthy, go? Well, you could ask, why the Padres let a guy like Luis Garcia, who is filthy, go? Well, because the on-field big league results were not good, right? And Estrada seems to have caught on with the Padres, and Garcia, I mean, he's in a big league bullpen. That's something. So
one of my favorite quotes from 2 years ago, and I won't stand up and pantomime how Nabil Crismat said it, but you know, Nabil Crismat, who threw like 47 miles an hour, and I think that man has a lot of gumption for getting it done there in baseball, in the major leagues with you know, the pitches he has. But Nabil said, and he was talking about Luis's slider, his fastball, you know, 99 and the way it moved. And he said, said something to the effect that if I were Luis Garcia, I would walk around in here naked all the time.
It's a great line. I love it.
This segment is brought to you by Hamul Casino. Kick off summer at their annual block party on June 15th. It's a full day of free play, live music, free food, and more. Learn more at HamulCasinoSD.com.
Hey, as we wrap up here, I always kind of put you on the spot. And today's simple. Just tell me a story about covering the Angels. Because you covered the Angels. Was it your first Was that your first big league beat?
That was my second big league beat. 97
Dodgers
was
the Dodgers,
and then yes, 97 was the Dodgers, and the LA Daily News just said, "Hey, you're lucky to have this beat, so take it for the money that you're making covering Cal State Northridge." And I said, "You're dang right." And fortunately for me, because my wife, who is in a business where when you do well, you make more, the Orange County Register came calling and doubled my salary to come cover the Angels. And that was a lot of fun. And they had a lot of good players who 3 years after I left, they won the World Series.
Yeah.
2002. Yeah. Darren Erstad, Tim Salmon, Garrett Anderson, Jim Edmonds, Mo Vaughn, and that's probably the one that stands out to me. Bill Bavasi, really good baseball man, the scout, and was the general manager of the Angels. They were the Anaheim Angels at the time. I think even maybe they were the Angels of Anaheim before they were the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. And now
they have the cool powder blue vest.
It was the Periwinkle was the official club. But Bill Bavasi, they had all this homegrown talent and they were right on the verge. And so before the 1998 season, as a matter of fact, it was on Thanksgiving Eve. I know because I was then at Mo Vaughn's house on Christmas Eve or 2 days before Christmas doing a feature on him. But Thanksgiving Eve signed Mo Vaughn completely out of the box for Bill Bavasi, signed Mo Vaughn to the richest contract in baseball history after his time with the Red Sox, had been an MVP. First inning of his first game, Mo Vaughn steps in the dugout and suffers a high ankle sprain and just isn't the same player for quite some time. He did do some things for the Angels after I left, but it was just like this lesson of if you think you can be a general manager, like that's a slam dunk. You just made your team better. $80 million. That's like 300 or more in today's MLB dollars. That just really stood out. But I loved covering that team. Dave Hollins, Gary DeSarcina. I mean, you want to talk about the red ass. These guys were hardcore, man. And they would yell at you, AC, get over here. And then everything would be fine. And they talked to you after the game and everything was great, but they read everything. They knew what was being said about them. They held each other accountable. They talked dirty. It was old school baseball. And it was a lot of fun.
One of these days we'll have to do a Hot Lava podcast after dark where we can say some words and talk about some topics, because then I would ask you for a Jim Edmonds story here or there. Cause I bet he was a trip to cover.
I loved covering Jim. He was not popular among his teammates in Anaheim. I did my best to kind of explain. Jim Edmonds was their most clutch player. He was arguably their best player at the time. Erstad became that. Jim Edmonds was incredible.
Yeah, incredible, incredible. And a one-time brief Padre before, well, it's a different story for a different podcast. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast, Padres Angels three-game series. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or I'm sorry, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. See, I'm all turned around, and then they come back home to play four this weekend. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.